Biotechnology is at the heart of advanced biofuel production, which is why the renewable fuel standard is a top priority for the industrial environmental section at BIO. The renewable fuel standard, or RFS, was enacted by President Bush. His reasons for expanding the RFS, in his own words, from his 2006 State of the Union address, was that keeping America competitive requires affordable energy. And here we have a serious problem. America is addicted to oil, which is often imported from unstable parts of the world. The best way to break this addiction is through technology. And I would note, following on President Bush's initiative, that both President Obama and presidential candidate Romney support the renewable fuel standard. The RFS is a long-term, forward-thinking policy for opening the U.S. fuel market, which for too long has been dominated by foreign oil, and opening it up to homegrown technology. It was designed to hurry the future. During his 2006 State of the Union address, President Bush gave a goal of making technologies for cellulosic biofuels cost competitive within 6 years, and it's working. Companies that have made substantial investments representing hundreds of millions of dollars over the past 6 years to move American-made technology from the drawing board to the cusp of commercial reality are pictured on this map. We estimate more than $5 billion has invested here in the United States already because of the renewable fuel standard. Back in 2007, when BIO first began mapping the industry efforts to commercialize cellulosic biofuel technology, there were a handful of pilot projects and plans announced by about 20 different companies for larger demonstration commercial facilities. Today, there are many more pilot and demonstration facilities in operation, new types of biofuels reaching the pilot and demonstration scale, and a number of commercial-scale biorefineries operating, commissioning, or are under construction. Some of the companies are represented here today, but others are not. For instance, Sapphire Energy recently announced that its green crude farm in New Mexico has begun pilot production and is scaling up for the production of algae. Chemtex also recently announced that it has secured funding for a 20 million gallon facility to be built in North Carolina. Each of the projects on the map represents not just millions of invested capital, but also hundreds of new employment opportunities. We estimate that more than 5,000 people are already working directly on building demonstration and commercial scale projects for advanced biofuels here in the United States. These include high-paying opportunities for a well-educated workforce, jobs in research, engineering, and equipment manufacturing, as well as traditional jobs in construction, transportation, and agriculture. Advanced biofuels are creating careers, not just short-term jobs. That's why a broad coalition of industries maintains support for the renewable fuel standard. And you can see a list of some of these in organizations here in red. Of course, the policy has its detractors as well. Game-changing technology has a way of generating detractors, particularly among industries that could lose market share and our incumbents. We have always known that an obstacle for our industry would be incumbent companies trying to quash the new technology or to strangle the baby in the crib. Our best answer to these detractors is continued progress and getting steel in the ground. It's unfortunately still true that the United States relies too heavily on imported oil, and that the price of oil is set by some of the most unstable regions of the world. And it is equally true, fortunately, that technology produced right here in the United States is our best bet for changing the situation. With that, I'd like to introduce our speakers who will talk about what their companies are doing. And after the presentations, we'll open the discussion up for questions from here in the room and on the telephone. Our first speaker today is Christopher G. Stanley, Executive Vice President for Abengoa Bioenergy.
Thank you, Brent, and thank you all for coming this morning and allowing me to update you on the status of Abengoa's efforts to commercialize our first cellulosic ethanol production facility. Abengoa is an international company. We develop and apply innovative technologies for sustainable development in the energy and environment areas. The company has been around for over 70 years, employs about 23,000 people in over 70 countries. So we have a large footprint. Our division is the biofuels division. We're based in St. Louis, Missouri. From that location, we supervise production assets that are currently located on three continents, and also, most recently, our new cellulose facility, which is kind of depicted here in this slide. We have spent 10 years working on the development of cellulose to date. This is not a new thing for us, something that has been in the planning stage and in the development stage for some time. We started, of course, like everyone, with laboratory scale production, proving technologies. Our particular technology in this facility will be enzymatic hydrolysis, and we proved that in a laboratory scale several years back, started working on that again in 2002, went from there to a pilot plant demonstration in central Nebraska, and first produced cellulosic ethanol there in 2007. From wheat straw, actually, despite the fact that we were in the midst of corn country. Then we moved on to a demonstration scale plant, a larger, about a 1.5 million gallon per year facility, that again scaled up the technology and tried to anticipate additional challenges that we might face in scaling it up all the way to commercial scale. Now I'm very happy to say that as of September of 2007, September of last year, 2011, we started construction on our commercial scale cellulose facility in Hugoton, Kansas. It's the extreme southwestern corner of Kansas where we have all the biomass we could wish for, everything from agricultural residues such as corn stover, milo stubbles, wheat straw, and multiple prairie grasses to choose from. So it's kind of a dream location for us. Our facility is designed to produce 25 million gallons per year of cellulosic ethanol from this biomass. Additionally, we will also produce 20 megawatts of gross electrical power, also from biomass. We will use about 1,100 dry tons per day. One of the results of that is, a tremendous impact on local employment. Not only will we have permanent employment at the plant of 65 jobs, about a $5 million annual payroll. But during construction, we will have an average of about 300 direct construction jobs. We have well over 100 people on site today. We will have, on many occasions, 500 people on site. It kind of depends on what aspect of the project is going on. But over a 24 to 28-month construction period, we expect to average about 300 direct construction jobs and construction workers on site. We've also contracted with local farmers within a 50-mile radius of this facility to buy their agricultural residues, which typically did not have any significant market value before, and we're going to purchase those residues to the tune of about $17 million per year, all of that, of course, staying within a 50-mile radius of this facility and directly benefiting the local economy. So we are... add to that the fact that there's 1,100 tons of stover coming in and ethanol and other products, byproducts going out, generates a sizable impact on the local trucking market. There'll be hundreds of trucks that come in and out of that facility per day. Someone, of course, will have to drive those, buy those, service those, et cetera. We're very excited to move on to, to complete this facility. This is a relatively recent picture of the facility in the foreground. This is from June, but in the foreground you can see fermentation tanks, beer wells. In the back left side are distillation towers. In the front there are foundations for water treatment tanks, which would be sizable. And in the back right you can see a infrastructure for boilers. Actually, those boiler houses have been completed, as have water cooling towers and other things. Also, in the very top of the picture, you can actually see we've already had several bales of stover already delivered to the facility. The stover will last until we are ready to operate and ready to utilize that. So that's already starting to be delivered, and we expect to start operations in the end of 2013, right at the beginning of 2014. So we're very excited about that. in addition to this general oversight, I just have a couple of additional slides. I was told three slides, so this is a quick trip, and we'll take any questions later on after everyone has presented. But I do want to point out that we are where we are today because we've been working with the government in connection with their incentives to develop this technology. We worked with the Department of Energy very closely in the beginning, and over the last few years to make sure that the folks who were going to provide us with Stover were able to participate in programs such as the biomass crop assistance program, that sort of thing. We don't directly participate in those, but the folks that supply us with the biomass, those programs are there to help them. We were also involved in some loan guarantee programs, and of course, you know, the overall development of this industry is driven primarily by the renewable fuel standard, and that is basically the primary driver of the development of second generation technologies and the ability to develop new sources of fuel, eliminate and do, or at least reduce our dependence on foreign oil, and at the same time using basically non-food products. So we're very happy to be a part of this, and I'll go ahead and turn it over to the next presenter.
Thank you, Chris. I'd like to introduce James C. Collins, who's the president of DuPont Industrial Biosciences, as our next speaker.
Great. Thanks, Brent. It's Jim Collins, by the way. That's a little easier. Like the colleagues that are up here to acknowledge, DuPont is certainly committed to the development of renewably sourced homegrown biofuels. The business that I represent, DuPont Industrial Biosciences, is one of 13 businesses within the overall DuPont company. And those 13 businesses are really aimed at, you know, helping to feed 9 billion people, helping to lessen the dependence, the world's dependence on fossil fuels, and certainly working to help protect people and the environment. As a corporation, we spend over $1 billion a year on R&D aimed at production agriculture, nutrition and health, and in the areas that I represent in industrial biotech. So to meet the needs that we're talking about from an industrial biotechnology perspective, we've really developed a three-pronged approach. First, working to improve existing ethanol production through differentiated agriculture, things like better seed products, better crop protection solutions, better processing aids and enzymes. And, you know, this is designed to get the absolute most out of the existing infrastructure that we already have in place. And then second, developing and commercializing and licensing some of the new technologies that we're up here talking about. Technologies that will allow the conversion of cellulose, non-food sources into ethanol, as Chris talked about. And then third, it's about developing and supplying advanced biofuels, such as products like biobutanol, that are really drop-in fuels that will easily integrate with the existing liquid transportation system. So as Chris did, let me give you a quick update on where we are with DuPont's facilities. We currently operate a demonstration facility in Bunor, Tennessee, which has already been producing ethanol from Stover for the last few years, and its job has been to generate some very valuable data that will allow us to design and construct a commercial facility. Now, earlier this year, we announced that we purchased land in Nevada, Iowa, near Ames, near a facility, a Lincoln Way Energy facility, which is a 50 million gallon existing ethanol plant. We intend to build our facility right next door. You can see charts over there to the left. Some of we're moving some soil around. We're getting the site prep work, and we'll be holding an official groundbreaking ceremony sometime later this year. And then in the 12-18 month range from that point, we'll have the facility completed and up and running. About a 28 million gallon per year facility. And, you know, DuPont is investing $200 million of its own money in the design and construction of this facility. And we couldn't be more excited about where we are on the path towards bringing this plant to fruition. Now, I mentioned our facility in Bunor, Tennessee. So we already today employ about 30 employees at this facility. And once we get our new facility in Iowa up and running, that would be another 60 or so folks. And then you add to that the numerous R&D people, the construction folks that are involved, This is a substantial economic impact in both of these areas. Another point I want to make about these facilities, these aren't like other manufacturing facilities where parts kind of get shipped in from somewhere else in the world and then they get assembled into a finished product and then exported out of the area. These plants will buy all of its raw materials locally. And so we'll be shipping in Stover. We'll be working with local growers, right there at the field level to design and optimize the supply chains. And when you add up all of the impacts, the impact on the trucking industry, the impact on the local ag suppliers, agronomic suppliers, this works out to be hundreds of millions of dollars that are invested in these local communities. So when you step back and look at DuPont overall, we don't just start with the factories. These are exciting things to talk about, but actually we start back with the farmer. We have our Pioneer Seed Division, and we're really working to help deliver higher yielding products that can meet growers' demands for grain as well as silver for the overall industry. Pioneer has over 80 years of corn breeding expertise and our ability to accelerate and bring these new technologies to market to allow us to maximize the yield potential for every acre. Now, this expertise then translates to our supply chains because we know the farmers so well, we're able to work with them very closely to build from the ground up what we believe will be the most sustainable and advantageous supply chain to fuel our biorefinery. We think this is the real challenge in this whole process is the development of the Stover supply chain. The conversion technology, we've sort of worked out that capability, but securing this reliable, cost-effective supply of biomass is really the key. Overall, you're going to hear from my colleagues about kind of the status of where we all are. We're excited about our place here with cellulosic ethanol. We're also working on one other area around butanol. We have a 50-50 joint venture with BP called Butamax Advanced Biofuels. And we have developed and we'll be commercializing butanol as well. And just one thing different, it's butanol is a little bit different in that we're converting existing facilities. So we're not adding, additional demand out there for grain supplies. We're really working with the infrastructure that's already in place. And our Butamax JV has already signed up 11 potential plants for conversion starting in 2013. And that's almost a billion gallons worth of capacity that will be converted over. So, anyway, thanks for the opportunity to talk a little bit about DuPont.
Thank you, Jim, very much. And our next speaker is Pat Gruber, CEO of Gevo, who's also going to talk about butanol. And for the reporters in the room that don't know what butanol is, maybe, Pat, you can give us a brief tutorial, because it is a new molecule, and that's what's exciting about advanced biofuels. It's not only about new processes, but new fuels and new molecules. Thank you.
Well, butanol is not a new molecule. It's an old molecule, and those of you who like scotch probably even know it well, especially like scotch better than bourbon, because it's one of the distinct flavor characteristics of scotch whiskey. So if you walk into our labs, you'd say, bunch of drunks, is what you would say. Now, the trick of butanol is we had to learn how to make it cheap, very inexpensive. It's a retrofit of existing ethanol plants. And so it provides it's a great building block platform molecule. And in fact, you can make all these different products from it. Butanol itself has markets as a solvent or a specialty chemical. Butanol is currently traded, made from petroleum, traded and sold into those marketplaces. That molecule right there, I'm a chemist. Look, you got to look at molecules when I talk. Those are four carbons, the black things represent, and the red thing is an oxygen. Now, when you take that oxygen off that molecule using chemistry, that's the exact same chemical called isobutylene, one of the fundamental building blocks of petrochemicals. From that, one can make jet fuel. It is jet fuel. It's not some hypothetical, maybe jet fuel. It is jet fuel. You can make gasoline. You can make rubber for tires. It's a very different paradigm. What enables it? Low-cost processing technology. That's what enables the whole business opportunity. The way we could use any feedstock, we're indifferent to that. The cheapest feedstock in the world has been cornstarch here in the U.S. And notice I say cornstarch, right? Because the way that this works is corn comes in, you separate the starch from the protein, you capture all the nutritional value from the protein and sell it. and then use the starch to make molecules like this. We have genetically modified a yeast to make isobutanol. The way that that works, you start with one of those yeasts, you turn off its ability to produce ethanol, and you turn up its ability to make isobutanol through genetic engineering. It's a massive effort, actually. So biotechnology techniques are good enough now where we can do those sorts of things. Along with that, there's some separation technology that has to be added to the plant to remove the butanol from the water. So the separation technology is the equipment that's added to that plant. And as I mentioned, there's two different markets. One is directly where you can use isobutanol. The other is when you process it further in a refinery. On the top left of this picture is our plant in Luverne, Minnesota. We recently started up this plant. This plant has 35 full-time employees. We get 220 contractors at its peak of direct jobs. That big building you see in the upper left of the picture, that is the addition that holds our separation equipment. We just started up this plant. We haven't been able to produce isobutanol. We're not good at it yet. We will be good at it. It'll take us like 12 to 18 months to get it to its full capacity of about 18 million gallons per year. But it's real, and it's working. We have a second plant targeted in Redfield, South Dakota. That'll be a 50 million gallon plant. And we'll be in that retrofit sometime in 2013. Now, Gevo itself has about 130 employees. We are spent in the hundreds of millions of dollars ourselves on developing this kind of technology. So, point is, it's real. We're making it real, making it happen. This is a jet fuel facility down in Houston. In Houston, we built it. We've taken the isobutanol, converted it into jet fuel, and we've made other hydrocarbons as well. As I say, again, these are the standard kind of hydrocarbons. Now, granted, we don't have all the cats and dogs, trace chemical stuff that comes with petroleum. Ours is cleaner. But same functional properties, same hydrocarbons. And to make this point about, we recently tested when you convert a butanol into a jet fuel, it's called ATJ. That's the lingo in the industry. So ATJ, you know, we flew a warthog with it here recently. So we're making progress on that line and been supplying the Air Force. And I happen to agree with my colleague, what we need overall with RFS is that stable policy is good. Shifting policy is bad. It scares investors. It's kind of that simple. And we need to be able to have a predictable industry. Thanks.
Thank you, Pat. And our next speaker will be Dan Cummings, who's vice president at INEOS Bio, to talk about their plant in Florida that will be coming online soon. Dan?
Thanks, Brent. Appreciate the opportunity to come here and talk today about the advancements that not only we're making, but all of our colleagues here at the table and others that aren't present today are doing in this industry to build a new bio economy based on these new technologies. So I'm Dan Cummings. I'm vice president with INEOS Bio. INEOS Bio is one of the 15 businesses of the INEOS Group. We're the fourth largest chemical company in the world. A leading biofuels producer in Europe, both biodiesel as well as ethanol in Europe. And we're also one of the leading refiners in Europe as well. So we have about 15,000 employees, 61 manufacturing facilities in our global commodity chemicals business globally in about 24 different countries. And we're also the largest licensor of chemical process technology in the world. So this is a photo of our plant that we've completed in Florida. And so here it is. This is an 8 million gallon facility, 6 megawatts of power. The facility has been completed. It's under commissioning now. So we should be in production. We say third quarter, so we're getting to the end of the third quarter. So that gives you an idea sort of where we are. So commissioning's gone well. So we're very excited about bringing this facility online. It's different than the other technologies, the syngas fermentation, thermochemical, biochemical process. So it combines gasification using waste. So the parameters for it, we use vegetative yard waste as well as the separated fraction of municipal solid waste to gasify and then feed that cool, clean synthesis gas into a large bioreactor. You see that that piece of kit right in the middle of the photo there, that's a large bioreactor which has our proprietary microorganism in it, which converts the cool, clean syngas into ethanol. It's then distilled in the tower to the right, which is the distillation tower, and goes into the tankage, which is at the far right of this picture. So back up here again, you can see the product tanks in the lower part. See the biomass up in the upper corner. That is all of the process biomass ready to go in. It's two gasifiers that go into that. As part of the process, we also generate a lot of waste heat and steam, so we generate power. So it powers the entire facility, and we'll have enough excess power to power up about 1,400 homes in the Vero Beach area. Vero Beach is on the east coast of Florida, just south of Cape Canaveral. So this is a full-scale commercial plant. So unlike a lot of other technologies, I said, we don't use, it really decouples the food versus fuel debate because we don't really use food products here. We're using waste as a feedstock. We broke ground in February of 2011. Our construction schedule is about 17 months, which is a very ambitious schedule. We completed construction in June of this year and have been undergoing commissioning since then. And what commissioning, as most of you know, is just bringing the various operating units up of the plant, testing all of the integrity of the systems, and then, bringing the whole plant online together. We have been granted a registration under the RFS2 by the EPA for both Part 79 and Part 80, which is the registration of the facility as well as the registration. Part 80 is the new part of the RFS2, which registers the different feedstocks that you're using for the cellulosic fraction that goes into the process. So what that means, the biomass itself has to, you go through a separate certification process. It's one of the first facilities that's completed this registration through the EPA. And as I said, we do anticipate production in this year, and then wrapping up the full production by 2013. Currently we're in the process. We've got all of the engineering done for our second plant and are in discussions with others to build similar facilities, not only here in the U.S., but also globally. Some of the economic benefits of this, I can sort of bring it down a level, is that, over 400 created and retained jobs. This is a direct investment of $25 million into the Florida economy alone. That's just direct into what we did with subcontracts. We particularly look to try and do subcontracts in the Florida economy. The average wage and benefits is an area that's had significant unemployment. It was one of the highest 25 areas of unemployment in the country when we started this project. It's now down to about 11.3%, but it's still very high in the overall scheme of things. But it's new jobs to an area which has not had any type of, economy of this sort. The last major employer that left was the Dodgers, who moved to who used to have their spring training facility and they moved to Arizona. So and very supportive of by the community itself. We are co-located next to the landfill, so we take all of the waste that's normally going into the landfill and now we process it ourselves. The equipment that we have, I think this is one of the key components of this discussion today as well, is that all of these projects, these are U.S., we're U.S. companies, building here in the U.S., that are, we source 90% of our equipment, here in the United States. The states represented here are where we had significant pieces of equipment, and engineering and design of this facility as well as construction. And a couple of key ones here in Ohio, part of our key components came from Speaker Boehner's district. Part of our key components of the plan came from the Majority Leader Cantor's district. So there are a lot of, components, and those are direct jobs that, that put people back to work and that we, anticipate as we build out not only this technology and deploy it further, not here in the U.S. as well as globally, that we would, continue jobs in those particular areas. So again, look forward to taking your questions today. This is a picture of the facility, and as we said, these technologies are coming online, and we do see, both adding to the RFS and the cellulosic biofuels component, but also building out and improving not only greenhouse gas emissions. This the life cycle for this plant is very favorable, It exceeds the 60% threshold for the RFS2. In fact, it exceeds 90%. So, but it also, you know, adds to, you know, jobs here in the United States as well as energy security. So thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Dan. I think that's an important point about the jobs and how it's not just local jobs, but from manufacturing all around the United States. And I think we're seeing now petroleum refineries being closed as the oil industry has not updated many of these, and we're actually building new biorefineries. So I think that's a great story. Our next speaker is Adam Monroe, who's president of Novozymes North America.
Thank you, Brent. For those of you who don't know who Novozymes is, it's a biotech company that provides enzymes and microorganisms and biotech solutions from everything from laundry detergent to making bread last longer on the shelves to what we're here to talk about today, which is biofuels. We've been around for decades. It's a $2 billion a year successful company. And one of the most exciting things that we've been working on for the last 5 to 10 years, depending on how you think about R&D pipelines, is in the biofuel space. Every day, I come to work with my fellow Zymers. That's what we like to call ourselves. And whether I'm talking to our 150 researchers in California who are doing the deep genetic engineering for these enzymes that provide the key sugars to feed to bugs like pats or yeast that we're going to use in the Midwest to produce ethanol, or I'm talking to our guys in North Carolina. We have 500 people in North Carolina working on this. Or I'm talking to our newest employees in Nebraska and Iowa. I always have to remember this. This plant that we just started up in June employs people just outside of Omaha, Nebraska, and across the river in Iowa. These are our newest 100 Zymers. Why do we do this? We do it for basically two reasons. One, there's a critical policy that the country established back in 2005 and then again in 2007 that said we want to take a strategic decision to increase or decrease our dependence upon foreign influence around some of our energy supply. It was a critical decision the country made. And when we looked at that, we said, hey, we can do that. What's the potential? The potential in this country is gigantic. 95 billion or 90 billion gallons of fuel, that is more than enough to replace foreign sources of oil. So what was in between that vision and where we are today is technology development. And I'm here to tell you that that day has come. That's why you see companies like DuPont, Novozymes, and others that have invested over $1 billion of private money to make this happen, because we know it is possible. So, I can do this myself. What just happened in Nebraska for us? We just completed a $200 million investment in the latest advanced manufacturing plant of its kind to produce the critical enzymes, make commercially available these enzymes to convert all of these different feedstocks that you've been hearing about into sugar so that they can then be turned into the molecule of choice. We looked all over the world as to where to place that plant. I was part of that team. The only limitation we had was not in China because we were already built there. And we found the very best spot was to put it right in the heart of the United States. Why? Because it's the absolute best place in the world. If you just look at it all over the world, it's the best place in the world to make this happen. Because the U.S. sits on the biggest potential feedstock, the best technology capability, and there's certainly plenty of capable workers out there to make this happen. And I know it's true because every day I work with over 1,000 Zymers across North America who one way or another are working with this. So that was a critical decision, and the renewable fuel standard, I can promise you, helped us make that decision, helped us to decide we should put this in the U.S. because it's the best place in the world from a policy perspective as well. So I'm here to tell you that the RFS is working. We're very proud of this new plant. We built it so that
it's also rapidly expandable. Today, it's up and running. We're producing enzymes and shipping them out. And it's also ready for the future. So we're ready to put another 200 million plus into, along with our partners, another billion into expanding this as necessary. One thing I want to address, because I know it's a bit of the gorilla in the room, and that is what the drought has done to the concerns of others around the renewable fuel standard. We supply enzymes into the animal feed industry, and we know that those guys are hurting due to the high price of corn, that the drought may happen. The guys in the biofuel space are also hurting. The capacity of that industry has ramped down. Those are good American jobs created to help us rid ourselves of foreign influence. That's an important job in this country, as is the important jobs in the animal livestock industry. They're all getting hurt due to the drought. Why we would want to pick on one or the other makes no sense to me when we're looking at what we are standing at the doorstep to do. So we're ready to put another billion collectively into this industry. I think you can see how demonstrated, or you can see the demonstration of how much success there has been. This is not fantasy. This is real. And the potential for the United States is huge. So we just need to stay the course. It does send instability signals to my Scandinavian board members when people start talking about policy waivers and these kind of things. That's not helpful. And we don't need it. So I'll leave it at that. We're really proud of where we are today. And I really look forward to the success in the future of what we're going to see from turning trash into biofuels, to energy crops, to ag waste. Thanks.
Thank you, Adam. And now for our last wrap-up speaker, we have Doug Verb. It's been a long day already. He's the vice president at POET, and he's going to talk about the POET-DSM joint venture. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks, Brent. Good morning, everybody. My name is Doug Bourbon. I am with POET. I'm representing POET-DSM Advanced Biofuels joint venture this morning. This joint venture consists of two innovative companies that have one shared vision, making cellulosic ethanol a commercial reality. We are two companies leading the transition from a petroleum-based economy to a bio-based economy. POET is one of the world's largest ethanol producers. We've got a capacity of about 1.7 billion gallons of ethanol today. We market about 9 million tons of distillers dried grain on an average, on an annual basis. We're about a 25-year-old company with 1,500 employees. We've got a cellulosic pilot plant in Scotland, South Dakota that we've been operating since 2008. A little bit about our partner DSM. They're a global science-based company active in health, nutrition, and materials, connecting its unique competencies in life science and material sciences, giving economic prosperity, environmental progress, and social advances to create sustainable value for all stakeholders. They have about 22,000 employees. They have a very extensive global footprint, and they have annual net sales of about 9 billion euros or $11 billion. The JV is a $250 million joint venture. We announced in January 23rd, 2012, to commercialize and license cellulosic bioethanol. The objective is to make advanced biofuels a reality by 2013, and this company is based in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Project Liberty is the name of our first cellulosic ethanol project, located in Emmitsburg, Iowa, adjacent to an existing grain-based facility. Liberty will produce 20 million gallons of cellulosic ethanol starting in late 2013 and ramping up quickly to 25 million gallons. From there, we will license rapidly distribute licenses to the other 26 ethanol plants that POET operates, other ethanol plants in the ethanol industry and to other feedstock sources for more cellulosic production. Well, we are creating a rapid deployment system that we think can go very, very fast. Already, Liberty has touched thousands of lives from those working in POET's and DSM's labs, the pilot plant in Scotland, South Dakota, manufacturers of enzymes, the harvesting equipment companies, researchers and institutions, including Idaho National Lab, Iowa State University, many others. Mostly, though, it's been a collaboration with farmers in Iowa who are now leading an effort that would truly revolutionize agriculture. What you're looking at here is a stackyard of biomass. This is the largest biomass harvest of grain stover, to my knowledge, in the world. And that represents about a fifth of what we will be doing in 2013 when we're fully operational. This year, farmers in Emmitsburg will harvest about 85,000 tons of corn stover and continue building the logistical model needed to make domestic renewable fuels a reality. Many farmers in the area have invested significantly in new equipment for this harvest. One new dealership has opened in the Emmitsburg area to provide new harvest equipment for the farmers. Some farmers are already starting new businesses to harvest biomass from these lands. And like Congress believed when they passed the renewable fuels standard, farmers know they will lead the way in changing our energy landscape from one dependent on foreign oil to one based on domestic renewable resources if given the opportunity. Cellulosic ethanol today employs people in many states across the country, as Brent showed in the first presentation. 1,500 plus jobs in cellulosic biofuels have been created so far just by DuPont, Novozymes, POET DSM joint venture, Abengoa, and BP Biofuels. And it's expected that 10,000 to 20,000 new jobs will be created for every billion gallons of ethanol produced. Just so you know, the renewable fuel standard calls for 16 billion more gallons of biofuels by the year 2022. That's a lot of jobs. Liberty is expected to create $12 to $14 million in annual revenues for local farmers by harvesting their residue of corn stover. Very significant economic impact in that area. Keep in mind, there are over 200 biorefineries across the country that you can bolt a cellulosic ethanol plant onto. The economic advantage of building a cellulosic plant right next to an existing grain-based plant is that you can sell the energy produced from the waste product of the cellulosic plant to the grain-based facility, which eliminates the grain-based facility's need for fossil fuels. So Liberty is under construction today. I haven't gone through my pictures very well for you, sorry. Liberty is under construction today. We are confident in the technology. We're confident in the logistics of harvesting, transporting, and storing the biomass. The project is fully financed. The only uncertainty seems to be in the strength of the renewable fuel standards at this point. Let the RFS do its job, and the technology companies, farmers, and manufacturers will do theirs, leading the U.S. to clean domestic renewable fuels. I think it's important to point out that since 2005, the RFS has helped the U.S. go from over 60% dependence on foreign oil to about 45% today. That's a significant decrease in our dependence on foreign oil. That's the goal of the RFS. It's working. Today, ethanol makes up 10% of the U.S. gasoline pool. I think that is tremendous progress over the course of the last several years. We are doing our part, companies up here, to continue the trend of reducing our dependence on foreign oil. We ask that we're allowed to continue doing that through the RFS. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Doug, and thank you for the patience of everybody in the room as we wrestle with our audiovisual PowerPoints here. I think these presentations have been fantastic. I've been working in this space for 12 years now, and it's really clear to me that we are at a vital inflection point for advanced biofuels. And I know how much work and how much sweat and how much money has been put into this effort. And it's really exciting and rewarding for me to see all these companies here with the demonstrable progress that they're making, the steel being put in the ground, the gallons being produced. And we're here today because we want to make sure the American media and the American public get the big picture. I mean, this is a picture that needs to be seen and a story that needs to be told. But this is a reality. It's happening. This is what we've done today. Imagine what we can do tomorrow if